You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, we're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. We're only 1 minute late this time. I think that's a new record. Usually we're 5 or 6 minutes late. But anyway, I digress. My name is, of course, Jose Young of MMAFighting.com, your host of the A-Side Live Chat. Joining us this week, one of my very good friends. He's finally making his return. Hopefully, I think his track record is 2 for 2 with technical difficulties on our end every time he's on. So fingers crossed, none of that happens this time. But welcome back, Matt Wells. Are you surviving in Texas?
I'm good, man. It's hot again in Texas. There's no indication that there was ever snow on the ground. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
How was the? Did you lose power? Were you one of the people that lost power?
I was very lucky. I didn't lose power. We lost internet for about an hour. That's about it.
Oh, jeez.
So I was very, very fortunate.
No trips to Cancun save you?
No. It would have been nice to be at Cancun, but no, man. We got about a foot of snow, and we were stuck in the house for a few days. But other than that, we got really lucky. Neighborhood right across the street lost power for a few days. So,
oh, Jesus.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Wild.
And of course, Matt is holding down the fort, Texas, but another fellow Texan now holding down Englewood. Casey, do you still have family in Texas?
Yeah, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
How they doing?
It sucked. Not the worst, you know. No one got frostbite or anything, but few friends had their pipes busted, or their parents' houses, their pipes were a mess or something, and most of the time, it was just a few families. They just got together, huddled up, threw their everything in the fireplace, and just basically went camping in their living room for a couple of days. It sucked. Yeah. It sucked.
And Englewood is still, of course, up to good, I would imagine.
Always good. Yeah, yeah. It's the best.
Always good.
Yeah, Englewood is up to the best. I think that's how it goes.
Englewood doesn't even rhyme anymore. Yeah. But of course, you guys know the drill, Matt. You know the drill. We can talk about anything and anything you want to talk about, MMA or non-MMA related. It will probably, I'm almost willing to bet it's going to be all MMA related. But shoot us any questions you guys got. Without further ado, Casey, what's our first question?
First question. Boo doo doo. That was a bad transition out of the music. I need like a little record scratch. All right.
Terrence Leverett on Twitter. Curtis lost this weekend reminds me so much of what happened with Corey. They both are wrestlers who were one win away from a title shot. Should he do the Corey route and go to Bellator? Not because I don't think he is elite. I just think he would be better treated there. Thoughts? So the first part of the question, I thought he was about to talk about Corey Sanhagen because they're teammates and they just fought. And then I realized he's talking about Corey Anderson. But Matt, yes, we're gonna use this. We'll talk about Derek Lewis in a little bit, but we'll talk about Curtis Blades for now. Hey, what if you're Curtis Blades' team, what are you telling him right now?
You're telling him, don't take this loss too hard. You got caught with the shot, you know, taking a kind of a lazy shot in, so to speak, right?
That's being polite.
Shot,
yeah.
Don't dwell on this one too bad. You got caught with the shot from a power puncher. Two guys have knocked you out in the UFC ever. And it's really not that bad. It's heavyweight. There's a lot of volatility. If you go out there expecting to not get touched on the chin at the heavyweight division, you're kind of living in a fantasy world, man. So I wouldn't take it too hard. He's going to be fine. His skill set is still far superior to most other heavyweights in the UFC. So it's just get back to the gym, get back on the horse, you know, start training again. I guarantee you he's going to come out, whoever he fights next, looking really sharp.
Now, this comparison to Corey Anderson, I hadn't really thought of. Corey Anderson, of course, I think had deserved the title shot even before he fought Johnny Walker. And remember, Casey, you and I interviewed Corey Anderson at that first Dominance Media Day. And that Media Day had everyone from Usman to Cejudo to Gaethje to Marlon Moraes. Rumble Johnson made his first appearance in a long time. And of all the interviews we did, Corey Anderson was by far the most animated. He was on fire. He was red hot when they were talking about him fighting Johnny Walker, saying obviously he felt disrespected by Dana White and this and that. I haven't really heard Curtis Blaydes say that in recently. He's obviously said in the past, but not in recent times. But do you see the parallels between Corey Anderson and Curtis Blaydes right now?
A little bit, in the sense that I think that the UFC neither Corey Anderson nor Curtis Blaydes were the needle movers that I think the UFC likes. They're definitely elite fighters in their weight class, and both guys are capable of exciting finishes, but also very capable. My Siri just turned on, but also very capable of grinding out boring losses. Unfortunately, what I think the comparison comes to mind was really is the fact that when Curtis Blaydes and Corey Anderson, when they happen to lose, they lose big. You know, they get like smoked and they're just out cold. It's not like, you know, they lose a close decision or they get kind of, you know, I don't know, just a dominant unanimous decision, more like a Tyron Woodley type of loss. But they're getting like just out cold. Like Corey Anderson got just out colded by the champ, and Derek. We just saw what Derek Lewis happened. What happened with Derek Lewis? So I see the comparisons, but I agree with Mr. Wells. Blaydes looked really good until he didn't, you know. So like until what how long did the fight go? Like 6-7 minutes was that fight?
About
6-7 minutes. So for six minutes and 50 seconds, Curtis Blaydes looked great. Just got to work on those last 2 seconds of the fight.
Yeah, looking at Corey Anderson's record, he's been knocked out by Jimmy Manoa with that violent punch in the main event, and then he got head kicked by OSP in Madison Square Garden. And then he got knocked dead by the champ. And then before that, he lost a close split decision to Shogun Hua in Brazil, I might add. And then I think Matt hit it on the head. He's been knocked out. But Curtis Blaydes has lost to two people in the world. Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou. But
how did he lose, though? It's not even that he lost.
Look at how many other people have lost to those two like that. Curtis Blaydes just happens to have lost to both of them.
That's just unfortunate. I mean, Francis Ngannou has losses, but we've never seen Francis just laid out like, I'm done, you know. And that's why I think in our heads we still see, you know, Francis Ngannou has a potential champion. With Curtis Blaydes, it's just harder to picture that in your head because you've seen him just like flattened. So I think it's unfortunate, but yeah, it's a crappy
Curtis,
loss. It's a bad loss.
Curtis Blaydes is in Curtis. Like, has anyone else lost to? Has anyone else been knocked dead by Ngannou and Derek Lewis?
Oh, it's got to be one person. One unfortunate soul has to be up there. Another one.
I mean, both of them beat Volkov, but that was a decision for Blaydes.
No, I'm saying, has anyone been knocked out by Lewis and Ngannou?
Oh, knocked out by Lewis. Okay.
Yeah. Like Curtis Blaydes has been knocked out by the two hardest punchers in the UFC. And that's it. I know Olenek hasn't fought.
He hasn't fought Ngannou.
Ngannou yet. Yeah. No. And then Overeem hasn't fought Lewis.
Yeah.
Junior has fought both of them, but knocked out by Ngannou, but beat Derek Lewis. I think Curtis Blaydes is the only one that has fought the two hardest punchers and lost to both of them. Junior's 1-1. Overeem could fight both of them. I saw a question about that coming forward. So don't know.
I think it's crazy. I would know. We've kind of conceded that Curtis Blaydes is probably the best heavyweight I would say probably the best heavyweight wrestler in the UFC right now. But yet, you know, we always say, oh, wrestling, that controls the fight. But wrestling ain't working for him against those guys. If you punch hard enough, it negates wrestling, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, Matt,
I'll phrase it to you like this. Is Curtis Blaydes a better MMA fighter than Derek Lewis?
Yes. Yes, I think so.
I would agree. Derek Lewis could just punch a hole through the sun.
Exactly. Exactly. And that uppercut was so perfectly timed too. Like, it doesn't matter who he caught with that. Anybody in the world is going out from that uppercut. So it's hard to knock Curtis Blaydes for this, because like Casey said, he was looking really, really good in everything he was doing. The feints that he was doing, trying to create openings, you know, staying in space for the most part. And then he just took that ill-advised, you know, takedown shot.
And he didn't need it. He didn't need that shot. That's the crazy part. Like, I felt the leg kicks and Curtis's jab. I mean, I don't think it would have been exciting, but I think he could have almost cruised his way to a 25-minute decision victory over Lewis standing. But I think Curtis Blaydes just wasn't comfortable, actually. He's like, this is almost too easy. I'm just, you know, he's like, I got to go to his bread and butter, which –
I mean, you got to credit Lewis for that, too, right? Because, you know,
waited. He was
Derek Lewis, he's the biggest troll in the world, like outside and inside of the cage. Right. And he kind of lulled him to sleep a little bit, I think, too, because he was like all of the feints that he was doing, like, were getting zero reaction. Derek Lewis just kept standing there, like, you know, with both of his hands up, just staying in his own little pocket there. And Curtis was just trying to make something happen. And yeah, something happened. All right.
He just ran into Derek Lewis's fist. We'll talk about him more down the line. But if Curtis Blaydes does want to go to Bellator, fine. But I think the better fights for him, like the fights that I'm interested in, are all in the UFC. But Bellator heavyweight division is fun too. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't say no to him versus Bader, or him versus who else is in that the division right now? Timothy Johnson and Sheck Kongo and all those people.
Curtis Blaydes is a top five, four heavyweight in the world. So obviously anywhere he goes outside the UFC, he's going to be the first or second best heavyweight there. So, Curtis Blaydes could be the, he could be the best heavyweight in the UFC. It's just not against those two guys.
Not when he runs into a fist. Like, happens. You get punched. Anyone gets punched by him. Like, that's like Stipe got punched by Francis Ngannou and survived. And that's why he's the champ. Daniel Cormier survived and submitted Derek Lewis. That's why he was the champ. The people that can survive against those two are champions. Anyway, we'll talk more about Derek Lewis later on, I imagine.
Real quick. I know Curtis Blaydes, his career is still far from over, but he might be one of those guys, like, where you say he might be the greatest UFC heavyweight that never got a title shot. I mean, he still has time, but
he still has plenty of time.
He's still really young, too, for the UFC heavyweight division.
Those are big losses he has to make up, though. I mean, like, I don't see the UFC putting him in the front, like, toward the top of the line again. I feel it's going to be that was a bad loss.
He's still a headliner. Like, he could headline a fight night, like, coming 100%. Off a loss. 100%. So,
And one of the other differences between him and Corey Anderson is that he goes out there and finishes fights. Most of Corey Anderson's wins were decisions and not the most exciting ones, you know.
Curtis Blaydes was kind of known for that too.
Yes. Curtis Blaydes. That was also like his last. I guess it was his last win in the UFC, because then he ran into Jan Blachowicz and got starched.
I think Curtis Blaydes gets a bad rap for his decisions, because like he knocked out like the Mark Hunt decision and the Justin Willis decision and the Volkov decision were just dominant. Like, I don't think he lost a second of those fights. Like Hunt and Willis, he just threw around like a sack of potatoes. And then he knocks out JDS, Shamil, Overeem, Olenek. Like, he's either knocking you dead or he's just throwing you around like a big brother. So I think there's a little bit of a difference between the Corey Anderson and the Curtis Blaydes decisions. And then the Volkov fight was just – he just Ben Askren'd him for five rounds. Which is fine.
I actually thought that fight was closer than people remember it. But yeah, he obviously won that fight. Yeah.
But like, there's no question he won that fight.
Yeah, he won the fight. Yeah. But you also won the fight. But it was one of those, but for a fan, you want to see the other guy like leave a different man. Like, you know, at least, like, leave with a limp, at least. I mean, Volkov was just like, I lost. You know, like, he's just like, yeah. I'm tired now. But I think as fans, you know, when you see a main event, we watch sanctioned government violence. So, I mean, we want to see violence. So,
especially in the heavyweight division, yeah. That's what fans want.
All right. Anyway. Thank you for your questions, sir. All right. There you go.
Cringe from MMG2K20 on the site. Did you guys see Cejudo's interview he did with the Schmo? Two questions. Am I the only one that loves the cringe? His gimmick is ridiculously entertaining. Two, it appears he is still calling for the Volko fight. So Volkanovski, do you think we will see Cejudo in the featherweight division in 2021? I'm going to be transparent and say I didn't see the interview. Schmo does a lot of interviews with Henry Cejudo. So if it happened, I probably thought it was the same one. That's not a knock on the Schmo. It wasn't on my radar. So, Matt, do you like the cringe gimmick as much as MMG2K20?
It's different, you know. I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's just different. It gets attention. And, you know, people talk about him. So it works for him. But, yeah, it's the thing with Henry is that he's always kind of been that way. Because I remember way back at UFC 192 in Houston, we were just working in the back. And I believe me and Casey were actually sitting at the same table just editing our interviews and whatnot. And Henry Cejudo just walks up and just sits down next to us. And I look over, it's like, oh, Henry Cejudo just chilling. And he was cracking little corny jokes even way back then. So he's always kind of been that way. But, you know, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. It would bother me if he continues to do all of this stuff and throw out all of these challenges on social media and never comes back. That would definitely bother me.
Yeah, the cringe gimmick I'm indifferent to. It doesn't bother me and I don't hate it because people are talking about it. It is what it is. I do find him calling out every single fighter under the sun after he retired. And there's like, if he's retired, he's not fighting, then it is what it is. Like, stop calling people out. Like, you gave up the belts willingly. That's a little annoying, but again, I'm not losing sleep over it. Casey, do you like this cringe gimmick?
I'm going to go with what Matt said. It's a thing. I acknowledge it. I'm aware of it and cool if it makes him feel comfortable. In general, I don't like gimmicks in MMA. It's like you know, like you guys. I'm a pro wrestling fan too, but I like my pro wrestling and I like my MMA. I get the crossover. Kind of like it's like let's bring that gimmick. You know, that kind of the promos. The you know, the pro wrestling promos to MMA, I get that as far as, you know, getting people hyped. But I guess as long as it's fine. Whatever.
There are and I wouldn't even call them gimmicks. I like the fighters that kind of blur the lines between, so you actually question, like, is this person actually like this, or is this just a character? Like the Chael Sonnens and the Ben Askrens of the world. They're just like really good talkers. And they might not be like that off camera, but they blur the lines. Like for Colby and Cejudo and maybe a few other fighters, like you could tell, like you've interacted with them both on camera, off camera, they're just completely different. I like those. It's as Matt and you call it. It's a thing. It works for some people, I guess. I'm indifferent, but it is what it is. Anyway, go ahead, Casey.
I guess why Cejudo's cringe thing I don't really care about, or I mean, it doesn't offend me or anything, because because he's a gosh dang good fighter. He's a really good fighter. He was a double champ. I mean, like, so like you can do whatever you want, man. You can, like, I don't know, just wear stupid stuff. I don't know, wear big baggy jeans and I don't know, like stupid shirt. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't care what he does, honestly, because Cejudo's a really good fighter. So when you're that good, you can do all the stupid jokes you want. You know, if he sucks, if he was like, you know, then we'd be like, oh man, he sucks at fighting and I don't like his jokes, you know, but as long as
it's not problematic either, right?
It's corny jokes.
So it's like, it's silly. I mean, how can you really be mad when it guy's just being a goofball?
Yeah. I'm more over the word cringe. How about that? I think that's one. I think we need a new word for that. Just
also, I know there's a lot of rumor and innuendo of Ali controlling his clients' Twitters and stuff. I know for a fact that Henry Cejudo controls his own Twitter, because I've seen, like, I've been around him, because he lives in Arizona. He actually lives fairly close to me, and I've, like, been around him, and I've seen him post the tweets that everyone goes, and if people will respond like, oh, this is just Ali, I'm like, no, that's Henry. Like, that is 100% him posting his own tweets. So give him credit for that. He's not letting other people do it for him. But anyway, the second part of the question, do we see Henry Cejudo fight at featherweight in 2021, Matt?
I would like to, because, again, all of this talk, it makes me want to see it. And if we don't get at least some return, I mean, obviously, I would love to see him come back against Volkanovski, because that would just be an incredible accomplishment. If he could come back and actually beat him, that'd be ridiculous. That'd be legendary status, right? So, yes, please do it. I want to see it. Let's just embrace the chaos, so to speak.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If Cejudo wasn't a long enough champ at 35 to just go up to be a champ, to fight for the belt at 45. To me, but if Cejudo wants to come back to 45, he fights the number one contender, and we have Max Holloway versus Henry Cejudo. So I would be down for that.
But yeah, I wouldn't hate that one.
I just think, I don't know. There's something I don't like about Cejudo jumping in front of the line at everyone at featherweight, too.
Mostly because if I think of all the divisions, like, if he gets an immediate title shot at bantamweight, fine, because he was the champion, he vacated, and he's the returning champ, I get it. Flyweight, if they want to make Figueiredo, if he wants to fight the winner of, like, if Figueiredo wins and he wants to fight Figueiredo, 100% fine with that too. I don't think he would fight Brandon Moreno, because, you know, they got the whole, like, Mexican champion thing, and Henry Cejudo has been a huge advocate of Brandon Moreno. I don't like him skipping the queue at featherweight, because there are a lot of interesting fights at featherweight that I want to see. Because, like, again, like, that top five, like, none of them are fighting each other right now. So, yes, agree with you. If they make it, whatever. Wouldn't be my first choice. Also, Cejudo just wants the big money fights, which you can't blame him. You can't get what you don't ask for if he wants to make it. Because, like, again, I've talked to him off camera and stuff, and he's 100% just about the money. If there's no belt on the line and he can make a lot of money, he's totally fine with that. He just wants to make as much money as possible and get out. All power to him.
Yeah, and that's why I have absolutely zero hate on Cejudo calling for that title shot. I totally get that. Yeah. I'm not hating 100%. That. I'm not hating on that at all. That's actually what I do see some
of the YouTube commenters saying Dana White called his bluff, which I also agree with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the name of the game we're living, man, right now. It's all about skipping the line and calling for money fights and, you know, division dominance be damned. So
it's why I've said this before. It's why champions like Max Holloway and Kamaru Usman right now, it's kind of, well, maybe not Usman at the moment because he's calling for the Masvidal fight, though he did tweet anyone can get it. Like champions that are just next man up, I'll fight you, like, is kind of a breath of fresh air in the current MMA landscape.
Yes, my goodness.
Stipe too.
Cool. They just make sure you pay them right before they get in there. That's 100%. All they're asking. They don't care who the person is. Just pay them what they're owed. All right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Bones. From another question from MMG2K20. So it looks like there's a few questions. What will John Jones do if Izzy wins the light heavyweight belt and calls him out? Thinking about this more and more, John Jones was happy for Khabib for around 5 minutes and one tweet when Khabib beat Gaethje and called himself the pound for pound number one. After that, one tweet and 5 minutes, Jones was furious at the idea Khabib should be placed above him. His ego would not let it go. If Izzy were to win, look into the camera with the belt and say, "Hey, Johns, I got your belt. Come get it." Would John's ego let it go? You know for a fact that the UFC will try to make that happen too. So, yes, there's a lot to unpack here. We all remember John Jones was happy for Khabib for about 30 seconds. I don't even think it lasted 5 minutes before the tweets started to come. Also, I don't know if Khabib called himself number one. I think the voting panel voted him number one, and then Khabib was like, "I am number one now. Like, now I can retire." John Jones obviously took issue with that. Fine, it is what it is. So, Matt, what do you make of this whole John Jones moving to heavyweight scenario? Will he go back down to light heavyweight if Izzy wins? What say you?
Wow. I would imagine that there are, like, John, for one, is kind of really paying attention to what's going to happen with that fight, with the Jan Blachowicz and Izzy's fight. Because that's a bigger money fight than anything that can happen at heavyweight, I think. That's bigger than a Stipe fight right now. That's bigger than an Ngannou versus Jones fight, just because of the way that Izzy can market himself. And, you know, whether or not the UFC gets on board with that, that's another thing. And social media videos from yesterday, notwithstanding either, that we don't need to discuss here. but, yeah, I think that John is... he's one of those guys that knows how to position himself to really kind of get in the UFC's ear, because he has the legacy already like set in stone. Right. The whole thing about calling for number one, I think, was purely just negotiation tactics on his end, because he's unhappy with his money. So him going out there and just reminding everybody, "Nah, I'm still number one. I'm still the king of this shit." So like, UFC, please remember that when we step into the negotiation table, right? So I think that was all just negotiation tactics. I think he really doesn't care if people consider him to be the number one personally. I think his ego is just like, you know what? I know I'm the best. So whatever you say doesn't really matter. That's just my opinion. I could be way wrong on that. But John's the type of guy that knows he can really just beat anyone that they put in front of him, I think.
I think John goes through waves. Like, I think when what he tweets, he 100% means, and then like the next day he might feel differently. But in that moment, I am very confident that he was offended that he was not number one anymore. To the point where he was tweeting like, "You know, this is because my coach has put in the work and this and that, and I just want the respect." I'm like, "John, you're the best fighter. You might be the best fighter ever." Talking about at this moment in time, pound for pound number one, I'd still would have put Khabib. Doesn't mean he's greater than you. I think John Jones is by far greater than Khabib. I just think at that moment, Khabib was the pound for pound best. Casey, what say you with this whole scenario?
Oh, John Jones is super jealous. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, of course John Jones is angry. Of course he wants to be pound for pound. He wants because he's got good. I mean, John Jones ain't wealthy, but he's rich. You know, he got lots of money. And he lives in Albuquerque. It costs like 50 cents a day to live in Albuquerque. He's good. So, like, you know, it's like, so he's got.
No,
he's
they pay you to live in Albuquerque.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, right.
And I love Albuquerque. I'm a big fan. But it's good. It's good. It's good for the wallet too. I don't think John Jones and Izzy is ever going to happen. If John goes back to 205. I'm really worried for John Jones, because a bulked up John Jones is a very slow John Jones. So I don't see John Jones, if Izzy wins next week, yeah, pretty much a week and a half. If Izzy wins as a double champ, is the assumption Izzy is going up in weight to heavyweight and just fighting John Jones at just some random, just a heavyweight? Just for the fight? Is that what we're kind of talking about? Or is we talking about Jones coming back down to 205?
Either one.
Oh, well, to me, there's a big difference. Yeah.
I think John hasn't even fought a heavyweight, so like that. Once if he wins the championship and he's the heavyweight champion of the world, then maybe we can talk about it, which I think eventually inevitably will happen. But yeah, the Izzy John fight is looking less and less likely as time goes by. Like Izzy's prediction of fighting 2021 International Fight Week is looking less likely.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening.
Forget Izzy did fight at heavyweight in his kickboxing days. And he's not necessarily bulking up for this fight against Jan Blachowicz either. So he could very well, you know, take a summer off, add a few pounds, and step in there at heavyweight. It could happen.
Poor Robert Whittaker.
Oh, yeah, poor. But Izzy fought at – who did he fight at kickboxing heavyweight? I mean, he wasn't fighting like Rico Verhoeven at heavyweight. You know, I'm pretty sure he was fighting, you know, regular.
He weighed in at 220 back then. So that was a while ago. I don't remember the names, but it was a few fights. He fought at heavyweight.
I don't know about his heavyweight kickboxing career. I knew about him when he was in Glory at middleweight, but at heavyweight. Did he have like a little gut? Was he like kind of BJ Penn? Did you ever see a fight with BJ Penn when he fought Machida at heavyweight?
Oh, so good.
They were both so such pudgy. It was so cute.
Yeah, kind of like how he looks now, right?
The YouTube comments. A young Cynthia Vance wants us to answer one of her questions. There you go. There you go. Cynthia Vance.
She was complaining so much. I had to get her out.
Like, I know.
With the blocker.
It's a legitimate question, as she wrote in the comments. Cynthia Vance, with all the increase of reports about reports out about the kind of fake it till you make it approach by one, do you think there will be a point where their house of cards would inevitably collapse? So the fake it till you make it, I'm assuming. What is the assumption here, Casey?
That only like literally only one person is watching one, but they're saying 1 billion. So
there's also been a lot of because on the forums and what have you, a lot of people think they hire media to attend, mm-hmm. so it makes it look like it's a massive gathering, which I don't know.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. What is the end game when their numbers, especially with the viewership and profit, are fabricated? Man. And
that's a big question. Loaded question.
It is a very good question. The fake it till you make it thing, like, we don't get to see their weigh-ins either, huh? In terms of the actual, like, in terms, like, outside of the numbers, we don't get to watch their weigh-ins, correct? They don't stream it or post it or anything.
Yeah,
the
whole idea of weigh-ins is a very North, like as far as being for the public, is a very North American thing.
One championship's whole thing is there's no weight cutting. Like you fight your natural weight, but if we can't see the weigh-ins, how do we know? Like who did Eddie Alvarez lose to?
His first fight. I forgot the gentleman's name. His first
that
fight.
That dude was not the same size as Eddie Alvarez. Like Eddie Alvarez didn't cut weight, but I'm willing to bet his opponent cut weight. But we didn't get to watch the weigh-ins because, you know, like, oh, they weigh in at 170. They enter the ring at 170. I don't know how true that was. I would love to know. But will the quote house of cards collapsing? Do you think that's inevitable, Matt?
It's very possible. I mean, they've got to really come up with some financial results because it seems like they're just borrowing money from everywhere, continuing to just go out there and put on this face of, hey, we're doing so great. Everyone's watching us. We have the best reality show in the world. Billions of people want to be a part of this organization and it's just not true. So it's wild, but I mean, apparently it's working with some investors still because they're still getting some backing. I mean, I don't know how long it can go on, though.
I agree.
It is legitimate.
Casey, do you know what the website Glassdoor is?
No, sir.
So Glassdoor is like a Yelp for businesses, but specifically for employers and employees. So Cynthia's still saying, answer my question, you coward. So it's a way. So like if you work at like Joe's Towing, in wherever, and they have a Glassdoor account, you can, and you have an interview, you can go on this site and people will review the interview process. They'll review the CEO, they'll review the working environment, the benefits, everything. So it's basically Yelp for job seekers. won championships, if anyone hasn't read it, is pretty all over the place. Like one of them, I just pulled it up right here. 1 out of 5 stars, September 30th, 2020. I've been working part-time, won championship for 3 years. The pros is free lunch and video games. The cons is it is a very awful company, all lies. That is one of the reviews. Some of them are 3 and 4 stars, but I don't see a lot of 5. Like there's a lot of 1 stars. Pros, good salary, bad work-life balance, upper management was unethical, secretive, and lots of smoke and mirrors on finance and company performance. Another one, good salary, travel opportunities, con. Everything in this company is, quote, fake. So if anyone wants to go read what the actual employees of One Championship have to say about the company, go read their Glassdoor. There are some positive. They're not all negative, but there are more negatives than I think a lot of people would imagine. Anyway. Yeah. So who knows? It could happen.
Plenty of reports, too, about, you know, as you kind of touched on, about journalists being compensated to attend their events are widely available. Just ask your favorite local combat sports journalist.
I would love to cover it. Like, I don't want, like, I would never take them up on their offer for getting paid to go cover an event. But as like a journalist and a fan, I would love to go experience a fight week for One Championship. I know our former coworker or my former colleague, Mark Raimondi, did before the big Demetrius Johnson one, or he flew over there and he did great work. He got great access. Chatri, the CEO, his whole thing of he gave an interview where he's like, we're real martial artists. But then he like brought up, he was like comparing their, like, what did he say? He's like, we're like real martial artists, like Jet Li and Jackie Chan and everything. I'm like, no, probably don't use actors for your big selling point on being real martial artists, but I would love to experience it. Just probably won't happen unless they come to the United States, and I hope they succeed and it's not all fake, because competition is great and fighters need enough more of a selection of making a lot of money. Because if Demetrius Johnson, Eddie Alvarez, Northcutt, all these cats are making a lot of money, all power to them.
Yeah,
Sage, hopefully it just doesn't turn into a WCW.
My phone about Sage coming back today.
All I got to say is I am super excited for Sage Northcutt versus Shingo Aoki.
Is not something I had on my 2020.
I'm going to enjoy this cold beverage now. Delicious.
Where's my polo? I have a 1 polo.
I have one polo somewhere, too. I've never worn it.
I got 3 of these.
That's right, Matt. I was with you. Matt and I were sitting at a coffee shop doing work because I can't remember the coffee shop's name, but it had phenomenal internet. And we were just sitting there working. And then some guy comes up and goes, I'm with One Championship. Like, I'm a representative. I was like, oh, cool. Nice to meet you. Like, I was kind of half listening because I was editing a video. And he just gave us shirts and disappeared into the night. I was like, all right. Never going to wear this. Yeah, 100%. The weirdest thing ever.
Like, we all kind of like shook him off. Like, okay, this is a weird fan sort of guy. But no, he legit gave us like very nice, high quality
shirts.
Golf polos.
If I ever played golf, that would be a high quality golf shirt.
I wear that shirt around often. I'm not gonna lie.
There were a few. I don't know if they were media or whatever, but there were a few people that were wearing like One Championship shirts on Fight Island in the hotel. Like when they weren't during Fight Week stuff, so they were just like getting dinner in the hotel lobby and stuff. There were at least 3 or 4 One Championship shirts I saw that they definitely got, like, just given to them.
The things that people do for, like, free swag is unbelievable.
So weird. It's not like Matt, you've covered boxing before, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Have you covered a Manny Pacquiao fight?
No, I've not covered a Manny Pacquiao fight.
So I remember there was one where Manny Pacquiao's team gave out shirts to, like, the media. Like, they were just throwing shirts into the crowd at like, a workout. And then the next day, you know, at least 80% of the media was wearing those shirts during the fight.
Boxing is a whole different animal when it comes to people that cover boxing. It's just,
it's unbelievable.
It's like you might as well just call it an extended fan section back there, because that's what it is.
Basketball gets like that too sometimes.
I've never covered basketball, so I can't speak to that. But boxing, it's ridiculous back there, boxing, man.
Okay. Now, next question, we alluded to it earlier. and I have I've been seeing this mentioned a lot on the social media platforms, but I have no idea what they're talking about. So,
what's up with Izzy Bird feeding his dog and groping his dog's privates? That's the USC's next superstar. Have either of you guys seen the video?
Is it on? Is IG? Is that what it is? Oh. Oh, whatever. No, I don't. Actually, I follow very few fighters, so I don't. I just wait for the good ones to get retweeted.
I saw a lot of people tweeting about this to the point where I literally just had to Twitter search it, and the video popped up. And yeah, it's a little weird. I don't think it's as gross and awful as people are saying. It's not like doing crazy things. It's like he's cuddling with his dog, and then he makes like a joke.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's very. It is weird. It's very weird, but it's not like people. I don't think you have to bring out the pitchforks for it.
It's strange.
It's just I'm just like, look, I like what the whole video is like 20 seconds. I'm just like, why? But then it's like, Izzy's a goof, so I don't know. It's not like he's abusing the dog.
That's what it is. But the dog look happy? Dog look fine?
They were just cuddling on a couch.
Wow, what's the big deal then? What's the big deal?
Some people like Juan Adams tweeted a funny thing. He goes, reason why I'm not, he was like, the difference between me and Izzy, and it's like, I'm not a champion, and my interactions with dogs. And he's just sitting next to his dog normally.
Yeah,
it was funny. Juan Adams is a funny guy, funny cat.
It was just weird. I think Izzy does a lot of things just to troll people because he gets so much backlash for just being him. Like, he gets so much backlash for being a fan of anime. So I think he just kind of amplifies shit just to kind of continue to piss people off that think he's like the quote unquote cringe callback to earlier, right?
Why did he get he still gets shit for watching anime? Anime is like a billion-dollar industry. It's like, that's all I can say.
Yeah, but
you watch comic book movies. You watch Marvel movies. That's for kids. It's like it's a billion-dollar franchise. Whatever.
People like, don't want people to enjoy things.
Yeah,
exactly. I've been alive for 30 years, and my biggest takeaway is no one wants you to enjoy what you want to enjoy, and nobody cares what you're interested in. They want to talk about what they are interested in. And there's like 1% of this world. Like if people like say Matt is a huge fan of The Boys TV show. No idea if he is or not.
I am.
I've watched The Boys. I mean, I've never watched The Boys, but I've read all the comic books. A normal person in this world, if I go, oh, you watch the show, I read the comics and I'll talk about the comic book. 99% of them will tune me out and then be like, okay, but the show. I'm just like, cool. All right, your turn to talk. And I will listen intently and give you the courtesy that you did not give the rest of the world. No one cares what people have to say about what they're interested in, and it's a travesty. Anyway.
That's a good point.
But yes, anime is great. Go enjoy it if you want. Don't let people tell you otherwise.
Give people, so say people have Netflix or Hulu or whatever, drop them a couple of recommendations of a series to start watching.
It really just depends on your, because it's like what genre, like if you're a really big fan of like the mind trip, like just like getting lost in this crazy bizarre anime, but it's not like over the top. Like some people, they think of anime, they think of like Dragon Ball and Naruto and One Piece, where it's just like this big over the top like spectacle, like fight scenes that last like half a year of television, which those exist. If you like Roxy and Izzy love those type of shows. I love Naruto. One Piece, it's still going on. So it's been going on for like 20 years. I love Dragon Ball. I like Dragon Ball better than Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball Z is great too. I think Paranoia Agent is by Satoshi Kon. If you're just a fan of cinema, like just high quality movies. Like, have you seen Perfect Blue, Casey?
No, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
So Perfect Blue and Paprika,
I've seen Paprika.
But it's a phenomenal movie. Whether it's animated or not, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
The same guy made Agent Paranoia, and it is like 25 episodes, and you will be engrossed by it because it's such a unique story. Like, if you're a fan of like, what do you call it? Like Twin Peaks. Like if you're a kind of fan of like that, Agent Paranoia is great. I think Cowboy Bebop is the best anime ever because the guy who made it really wanted to make a cowboys and Indians Western style anime for like the Western audience. And this production company's like, no, really, we really want a sci-fi show. He goes, F it. I'm making a cowboy show in space then. And that's exactly what he did. And I think it's phenomenal too. Attack on Titan, I think is, if you're a fan of like lore, like Game of Thrones or like that kind of thing where there's this big miss, like remember how every
I like Attack on Titan. I do like that's I think
every
that's
episode of Game of Thrones, like, every yeah. scene of Game of Thrones, like there's like, oh, what are we working towards? Like there's all this mysteries that coming out and there's like these like hypothetical scenarios and theories and everything. If you're a fan of that, Attack on Titan is kind of appointment viewing. I know our former colleague Sean Alshadi is a massive fan of haven't seen Perfect Blue. Perfect Blue's fantastic. Like Perfect Blue.
Jerks so in the comment good. Section. Just
so
jerks.
If people, but like, it's a huge, there's a huge twist in it, and I don't want to give it away. If you've seen Black Swan, Black Swan totally bit Perfect Blue. Like, not even just storylines, but like whole scenes, like the framing of scenes and everything. It's if you see that movie, you're gonna see it. But yeah, Bebop is great. Big O is great. They're all great.
Are you a One Punch Man fan?
So I was a really big fan of the
Demetrius Johnson loves One Punch Man, by the way.
Yeah, it's very popular with Western audiences. I was a really big fan of the webcomic because it was originally a webcomic that gave out for free. And then anyone that does that, like I have a good friend, Jason Youngbluth, who does Weapon Brown, which is like a post-apocalyptic Charlie Brown, which is like Mad Max meets Charlie Brown. And now he was doing that for free. And now he's kind of catapulted. Now he sells it. And that's what happened with One Punch Man. And then it became a TV show. I think the art is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Absolutely phenomenal art. The second season is way better than the first season. I don't hate it. It's not my favorite. I get why people love it. It's just not my favorite. But if you just want to really quick turn your brain off and watch One Punch Man, it's great.
Happy would just give us nice recommendations.
Peaceful Hotel documentaries, whatever. That show, Julia watched that and it bothered me. Really bothered me.
Oh, if you want to talk about the Cecil Hotel doc, I'll go off on that in a very positive way.
Made documentary. I absolutely hated every single person in that documentary.
Well, that's on purpose. Same. On purpose. It's not. Yeah,
I get it. 100%. Yeah, yeah. Also, if you really want to watch. Real quick on the anime thing too, because I know our audience.
Real quick, we're too late.
Real quick,
if subtitles don't bother you, I think Cross Game is such a gem of a story. Whether it's the manga or the show, it is so good, and you're gonna go into it being like, I'm gonna hate this. I have never been so engrossed by a story in my life. And then there's a new movie on Netflix that you can watch for free called Children of the Sea. Family Guy is a great animated show. Shout out to Rhode Island. Children of the Sea. I told Esther to watch this at one point. Mm-hmm. It's a manga right behind me. These kind of tan series. Books behind me. It's so unique, and they made it into a movie, and the same illustrator did the movie too, and it's on it's such a beautiful anime. It's a movie too. We want movies like pretty much any of the Ghiblis, but if people want to say Ghibli movies, Miyazaki is not the only people that make movies in Ghibli. So like, pretty much watch all the Miyazaki movies, watch Grave of the Fireflies once and then never watch it again. Because you won't want to watch it ever again. But anyway, I digress. I can talk about this stuff all.
Oh, I know. That was my fault. I kind of set you up, and I knew you couldn't say two things and just go and like, oh, watch this and this, and we're done. No.
Attack on Titan. Watch Attack on Titan, Bebop, and if you're a little older, kids watching this, don't watch Agent Paranoia. Wait till you're a little older. Adults watch that show.
All right.
Well, no.
Okay. We got lots of questions, so we're gonna go through them kind of fast, which means I'll shut up.
We got time. We don't got media day today.
Yeah. Whatever.
Terrence Leverett, thoughts on Invicta and UFC parting ways? Is it just a way to make room for EFC and other newly signed promotions? Also, where would you like to see Invicta end up? Would you like to see them under the Showtime banner? Hashtag the A side. Casey, I'm gonna start with you. Because you're very close to the Invicta team. You've done a lot for them. You've shot videos. You're friends with a lot of the fighters and the people that run that organization. A, what did you make of the Invicta and not UFC, but Invicta and Fight Pass, like kind of leaving Fight Pass? And if you had the decision, where would they end up?
I wasn't surprised. I'm not gonna can't air too much dirty laundry out here, but I wasn't surprised. I'm happy for him, Big Dev C. And I'm hoping they find a new broadcaster soon. Maybe they do. I actually don't know. But yeah, I think there's lots of good options for them out there. But I hope whatever new broadcaster they get, either Showtime, I doubt it'll be Showtime right now because they're very focused on Bellator, and I don't think Showtime can do two promotions. So unless they merge the promotions, which would mean Invicta will be fold, which I just don't see happening. So unfortunately, I don't think Showtime is going to happen. But, you know, there's so many, like, I don't know. Like, I keep seeing all these stupid commercials for Hulu has sports. Okay, I don't know. I guess maybe Hulu will broadcast Invicta FC. There's 10,000 commercials about it. So maybe I'll pay attention to one of them. But I just hope they find a good broadcaster, and I hope that broadcaster can throw some more money at them so they can ramp up their production value, because they have great fights. But I just feel like they need more funding to make their shows, the how they look on TV, as good as they actually are in reality. That's about it.
Matt, what will you remember most from the Invicta UFC Fight Pass partnership?
I just remember the convenience of it. You know, I didn't have to hunt for it. It was just right there on Fight Pass. You know, it was real easy to access, and I liked the okay, there you go. Yeah, it was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. But the questions of how long that relationship was going to last was always there. I remember way back even before then, you know, the questions of, you know, the financials of Invicta was always a hot button topic. And I was kind of honestly surprised to see them last so long on the Fight Pass platform. But I would like to see them kind of just branch out and do their own thing. Like if they could just stream like on their own, like YouTube channel for a little while and see how that works out for them. I don't know what the profitability would be for them going that route, but you know, I just want to see them do something a little bit different than no other promotion's doing right now. Hulu would be a great option. I think that's a fantastic suggestion there by Casey.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Where did they first,
Invicta?
Where was their first broadcast?
They were like a YouTube stream. They had a YouTube pay-per-view or like Fight TV, one of those things. But they weren't with some sort of network or
they weren't with a big conglomerate.
Not at that time. By that time, there really wasn't an option either. It was 7 years ago, so the world was a little different.
Also, when Invicta started, they were going to be the place to be for women's MMA. Since then, shout out to them for kicking the door in. But at the beginning, like Strikeforce had women's MMA, but then once Strikeforce got absorbed into the UFC, that didn't happen immediately. But now you got like the UFC, Bellator, Ryzen, like all these other major promotions have it. It's just more competitive. Like Casey said a million times, those like looking at Invicta FC, like in its first one or 2 years, every fight has big name in it. It's because that was the place to be.
I've said it on the show before, but like me working at those early, I think Invicta's 1 through maybe 7 or 8, all through those shows, essentially right until they kind of sold off the strawweight division to the UFC. Like, even though those women weren't household names or stars in MMA, just being there and watching them fight and watching them, you know, how they talk on camera, how they just, you know, just their manners, how they behave, I mean, not manners, how they carried themselves. I was like, dude, these women are going to be freaking stars. And Dana saw that too. I mean, that's why when he went to the one Invicta they had in LA with Cyborg on the card, and more importantly, they had Alexa Grasso and Irene Aldana. And when Dana White saw those women fight, he was like, buy them, get them all, you know? And And who knows, the MMA landscape would be so different if, just imagine if Invicta just had the funding and they could have kind of kept all those fighters. I don't know. It's a very different world, especially when it comes to women's MMA. But it didn't happen that way, and here we are.
As long as they get to keep Fight Church, I'm cool with where they end up.
Fight Church.
You know.
I wish they had. Remember when the Invicta held that card in Las Vegas during a big UFC fight week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was.
I thought that was such a good idea for whoever made that decision. awesome idea.
Yeah, but when they first had the UFC Apex, that's what I thought things were going to be like. I thought UFC would have the pay-per-views on Saturday, and then on Friday, there's like an Invicta card at the Apex. You know, this is all pre-pandemic. Even, I thought, makes perfect sense, you know?
And even Laura Sanko brought that up when they did the first Apex store. She's like, man, I hope Invicta's in here, but pandemic hit, probably changed everything. But yeah, hopefully Invicta sticks around because it is a hugely important promotion.
Yes.
Dana's controversy of his late stoppages from Tristan Gordet on the site.
Dean's controversy.
To MMA fighting, in your opinion, do you agree with John McCarthy's assessment surrounding the controversy of Herb Dean's late stoppage during the fights this past weekend? John McCarthy's breakdown of it was like, sometimes that happens, right? It wasn't like anything like in depth, right?
The Herb Dean stoppage on blades, is that what
John? I assume so. So John McCarthy said, I think his phrasing was like, sometimes this happens. Like, but Matt, were you okay with the stoppage? Like, in terms of it being late, did you think it was a super late stoppage?
I didn't think it was late at all. I think Chris Tione had an egregious one earlier in the evening, like
the first fight,
significantly worse.
Yeah,
significantly worse than what Herb Dean did. I mean, listen, he's in there with two gigantic heavyweights. One is a wrestler who shoots power doubles at will, so you don't want to get too close to these giants that can just bowl you over if you're in too close. If a guy lands a knockout shot like that and can instantly follows it up with more, it's hard to get in there and stop one or two more shots. I think it was fine. He did the best that he could. He instantly recognized when Blades was out, and it was kind of a weird thing too, because Blades kind of froze and then fell over too. It was kind of one of those things where he wasn't quite sure where he was at that angle, what if he was out yet. I'm sure if he was on the other side and saw him completely locked up, he would have maybe stopped Derek from, you know, going to the ground with him. But I think it was fine. Like, you know, it happens.
Say the line. These things happen. Say it.
These things happen in MMA. Yeah.
I think there are worse. I wish.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out. Yeah.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, do I wish Herb Dean jumped in earlier? 100%. But I don't think it was necessarily like this big, awful mistake he made. He just wasn't in position to get in there quickly. Like, remember when Masvidal knocked out Askren? The referee was fought like those last few punches that were, quote, super necessary. They definitely weren't. The referee just wasn't in position to get in there quickly. If Herb Dean was right on top of it, yeah, he would have stopped it. Just wasn't there. Casey, what did you make of that stoppage?
Not Herb Dean's best performance, but we've seen worse performances.
Definitely seen worse.
I think Herb Dean was a little late. Because if you watch, I watched the replay a few times, just focusing on Herb Dean. And to me, it was kind of obvious once Curtis Blade started kind of falling over. His friends call him Razor. we're buds. You know Razor. When Blade started falling down, it was pretty clear he was out, and I don't think Dean really needed to give it, you know, a full analysis once he hit the ground and laid still for a while. But not the worst. And I think if Derek Lewis didn't do the whole, hey, it's your fault, Herb Dean, it's like, if he didn't do that, we wouldn't even notice it. But that kind of added to the controversy a little bit. But let's focus on Chris Tione. definitely.
You see Derek Lewis's follow up tweet about it.
I saw.
What, Matt?
Well, first of all, Derek,
he's okay.
He's okay.
Yeah.
And the Undertaker
I saw that
one.
I don't know if he. Yeah. Or which one? Because there was a couple I saw. Which one?
What did the one that made me chuckle a bit was. I gotta pull
the
it
Black History Month was it. The Black History Month was
that's
hilarious.
The one. The Black History Month was so funny.
And then he couldn't
waiting for Black History Month to be over so I can make fun of Curtis for talking crap before the fight.
And then no, and then he talked crap about like 15 minutes. He couldn't wait another week. He had to go. Ah, screw it.
That one's good. I did not see that one. I did see a whole bunch of stuff on his Instagram story.
Yeah. Cool. Cool.
Anyway. And Curtis Blades hasn't thrown Herb Dean under the bus or anything, and he's the one that actually took damage. So, is what it is.
Yeah.
Thomas Moore, if you are Derek Lewis with the one fight left on your deal and your stock is and never will be higher than right now, was over him the right call out? Never is a strong word. He could get – his stock could be higher in the future. But Houston, Texas, gets a big knockout win. Obviously, we've talked about it, Derek Lewis over Curtis Blades. So, Matt. If you're Derek Lewis's team, are you waiting for the winner of Jairzinho and Ciryl Gane, or do you really want this Overeem fight?
If I'm the team, if it's me, I'm saying we're waiting for the winner of this fight because that makes more sense in terms of rankings and where everyone is in their career. But for some reason, Derek Lewis wants to fight Alistair Overeem, and it's just a weird thing that actually helps the UFC because now the UFC doesn't feel pressured to fit Derek Lewis back in this title picture. That's kind of a log jam right now. And we're all kind of waiting for John Jones to be like, hi guys, I'm here. So it's just a mess right now. And it really does help the UFC if Derek continues to push for this Overeem fight.
Derek Lewis said a million times, the title is great, but he fights for the money. He'll, quote, punch anyone in the world for money, as he told Daniel Cormier. If he wants Overeem, fine. I personally want to see him fight the winner of Jairzinho versus Ciryl Gane. Casey, we talked about it a lot on the post-fight show, but for those of you who didn't tune into that live quickly, Casey, what are your thoughts on this?
No, I don't like this call out. I feel that with Overeem, essentially probably one of the worst Overeem performances we've seen in a while when he fought Volkov. Not saying that Overeem sucks or anything, but like, I just don't think the version of Overeem that we're going to get versus Lewis is going to be it's not going to be a better version that fought Volkov. It's going to be more battle worn and older. So I'm just not sure what the UFC can get out of that Lewis Overeem fight. But if Lewis wants it, cool. If Overeem wants it, cool. I don't like it. The fight I love and I'm not going to get because that would make sense. Is I would love to see John Jones make his heavyweight debut against Derek Lewis. And that's the fight I want.
One can dream, Casey.
One can dream. Just imagine those gentlemen, just their mean faces, and I'm going to beat you up. I love it.
You love to see
those gentlemen. Love it.
Anyway.
Here we go. A little bit of this, I think, this weekend's card.
For Corner Sports NY on Twitter, Alonzo Manafield and Pedro Munhoz both are coming off back-to-back losses. Who's going to need a win more on this card and why? Well, I think the obvious answer is Alonzo Manafield because Pedro Munhoz is a ranked fighter. So if you lose three in a row unranked, it's not looking great. Right, Matt?
You are correct, sir. But Alonzo Manafield's also at 205 where they really need people. So he could stick around. Plus, Casey, he's a Fortis guy, so I'm saying he's sticking around regardless.
There you go.
I would actually think Munhoz, he's only coming off the very close loss to Frankie Edgar, correct? That's what.
And Sterling.
Oh, you just lost to Sterling? Oh, so two losses for Sterling. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. I actually think it's more important for Munhoz to win, which, Matthew said, Alonzo Menefield, he looks the part, and 205 is always kind of shallow. I think it's always been kind of shallow. So I think Alonzo Menefield will stay around, win or lose. But Pedro Munhoz, not that he'll get released if he takes a third loss in a row, but it's going to be tough for him to get anywhere near title contention if he takes another loss. He's very good, but he just move the needle.
His fight against Jimmy Rivera is a rematch. He's already 0-1 against Jimmy Rivera. He lost a long time ago in the UFC. What he does have going for him is he has stoppage wins over Rob Font and Cody Garbrandt. So if those two are anywhere near the title and Pedro Munhoz has big wins, like stoppage wins over them, then that obviously benefits him. Rob Font has never been higher in the rankings. Cody Garbrandt's obviously one of the most popular fighters in the world. One win, and he's already talking about getting a title shot right away and fighting Jose Aldo, fighting Davidson Figueiredo. But I still think it's Menafield because he might not be in the UFC with another loss. I think Pedro Munhoz will at least get one more if he loses. But I don't – obviously not the guy. Obviously a win is hugely beneficial for both men.
See, I just went with who looks better coming off the bus. That's I was like, well, Menafield does, so he's good to go.
Alonzo Menafield looks like who's that cat? Who's that linebacker on the Bills, Matt, with no neck?
And just all thighs, I guess.
I don't know if he's still there.
Retired for a minute, but he's like –
oh, you're talking about
– you know what I'm talking about? Tequila Spikes. Menafield has like the same body as Tequila Spikes. Right. Just he walks out and you're like, good God, like that dude could run through a brick wall head first.
We're talking regular sports now? Come on. What's going on?
Sprouts ball.
Shoot the touchdown. Let's go. All right.
Shoot the touchdown.
You're not familiar with this?
It's a new one for me.
PFL and Bellator from Alan Lane. Apologies if I mispronounced your name. Regardless of star power, which format do you prefer, PFL's annual seasons or Bellator's Grand Prix system? Also, will PFL ever overtake Bellator as the number two promotion behind the UFC? The first question is a question I've never pondered, so I'm going to ponder a little more. Will it overtake Bellator? Maybe. Isn't PFL on ESPN, right?
Yep. Yes. Yeah. So ESPN
if people still only view like anything on ESPN, like unfairly, people view whatever's on ESPN, they're going to hold in higher regard. Whether that's fair or not, that's another conversation. So maybe, I think the pandemic obviously hurt them, both promotions. But PFL, like again, it's probably easier to follow for people who don't follow MMA with like because they're used to a seasonal format. So maybe I think it's a little too soon to tell. But Matt, which do you prefer, PFL's annual tournaments or Bellator's Grand Prix system?
I love PFL's. I love their format as an entire like promotional gimmick, right? I think that's just fantastic because it takes a lot of the guesswork out of what happens when, you know, we're talking about titles and things like that. So I love that. But for a promotion that's not entirely wrapped up in that, I appreciate when Bellator does have Grand Prix. So I guess if I had to pick like what I prefer overall, I would love to see like the UFC implement the PFL system. That would be amazing.
The question is, which do you like better? You can't
the PFL. On. The PFL system. Annual seasons. I'm going with annual seasons.
You and your sports ball. Seasons.
Exactly.
Seasons.
Exactly.
Do you want seasons? Because so we can have an off season? Is that why you want seasons? Because if you have seasons, that means
sure. Yeah.
If you have seasons, you have to have an offseason.
Why not? I think that would build up anticipation for what happens during the season, like with sports ball, right? The sports ball.
Sports ball. Personally,
get excited.
Slam touchdown.
Personally, I am a huge fan of Bellator's Grand Prix system. Strikeforce Grand Prix system. Pride's one Grand Prix system. I don't care. Even PFL, I don't care what tournament it is. I love tournaments. You can't argue with who fights who next. You're in a bracket. I love that. I absolutely love it. UFC, when's the last – outside of Tough, what's the last tournament they did? The flyweights? Are they not your flyweight title?
The one that Tim Elliott won? No.
No, I'm not. The one Demetrius Johnson won. Remember they did
the four-man tournament that then that they screwed up.
Because Ian Wall, not only did they screw it up that way, Ian McCall, Demetrius Johnson should have gone around four because it was a tournament fight and it was a draw. So if anything's a draw, it should have gone to a final round, a fourth round. But again, I love tournaments. Don't care what format it is, whether it's seasons. I do like, because if you haven't watched Mike Hecht's interview with Anthony Pettis, he did kind of lay it out. He goes, he enjoys, like, I fight every 2 months. I know when I'm fighting, and I'll know who I'm going to fight right after. He likes that. It's not going to work for the UFC, because also UFC will lose money fights if there's tournaments. Because also heavy wrestling, like Curtis Blaydes would probably dominate a lot of Grand Prix because he can just control you, take less damage. Anyway, I digress.
I love the Grand Prix system because it mixes, because you can have your tournament, you can have your Grand Prix, but then you can mix in your actual prize, your kind of big money fights too. So you're not just for business and even for fans, you're not entirely dependent on your bracket format. You can still mix in other fights too. So I think the Grand Prix system allows more flexibility, but also allows the best fighter to advance too. So
that being said, I do like how now there's two, like the PFL system. I don't hate it at all. It's just another option we can watch.
Yeah.
Every promotion adds something different. Ryzen has the ring and the theatrics, which are all awesome. Bellator has the Grand Prix, which is awesome. PFL has annual season, which is awesome. And the UFC is just doing its thing. I like how every promotion has something different.
And on top of that, they all have different rules, no matter what, depending on what city they're in, too. So.
Hey, man, you're not wrong.
Fight to fight. Different cage sizes, different, like, how tall, how many sizes cage has. Is the cage a circle? Is it a ring? MMA. I think it's a sport.
UFC rankings. Should fighters have contracts that enforce them to take fights against lower-ranked fighters if they're coming off a loss? Conversely, if coming off a win, you're guaranteed to fight someone ahead of you. This might prevent fighters holding on to a ranking. Out from Alan Lane on the site.
This is complicated.
And the fact that media people make these rankings, that would make this question more complicated, because then you would be actively controlling people's contracts based on their rankings, right?
Yes. Yeah. And yes and no, but I don't know the better option though, because what, you let the promoters decide the rankings then? Then who decides who ranks them then? Is it?
That's why I don't know. Yeah.
I hate promotional rankings. I just hate promotional
rankings. That I agree with. Yeah, I agree with. It's all great for marketing and for the casual fans who would like tune in. If you don't know who's who, I totally get it. I wish there was an AP style like college football or like tennis, where like everyone, like a third part, like the reporters have their own poll. The problem is we're going to need all of the sites getting together for like a powwow. Imagine if there was an MMAJA or something that could get that done.
Oh, wow. Shots fired? Wow.
No shots fired.
No shots.
Just had to take it. It was sitting there on the platter. But, Matt, what do you think about this whole ranking situation? Because Bellator is now having their own rankings, too.
Yeah, the Bellator one is kind of weird for me, because it's like, do you have enough fighters to even rank in some of your divisions? But,
well, yeah, top 10. I think they're enough. Yeah.
I guess. I do like the fact that Bellator has a more respectable roster of media members, you know, compiling their rankings. Some of these guys that do it for the UFC, it's like, who are you? I've never heard of you before.
Give the Bellator rankings like 6 months.
Your website doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's the other rankings are in 6 months, because everyone still has to, you know, contribute. And once people start getting lazy and stop contributing, then all of a sudden you're down to, you know, MMA, you know, butttouch.cc, you know, ranking.
You know, right.
Don't go to that site. No one look for that site.
Yes. No. Or do and report back. I won't go myself. But no, the weird thing about the rankings is, like, if you're basing your promotion, obviously, like with the UFC, like their promotional thing is like money fights, right? So if a money fight presents itself, regardless of ranking, they're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
Thinking of Jose Aldo getting a title shot off of losses. It's just how it goes in the UFC. Whatever makes them the most money, they're going to do that. Rankings be damned, even though they're telling you, hey, this is the ranking system and this means something. But it really doesn't. It really doesn't at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's why I hate promotional rankings, because they don't mean anything. Unless they mean something when the promotion wants to use it against the fighter. Outside of that, I don't think it means anything.
Or in some commissions that are be like, hey, this guy's ranked too low, he can't take this fight.
Isn't that what happened in New York with Paul Felder or someone like that? Like,
oh, but I thought that was a rumor. I thought that was cleared up. I thought the commission said that wasn't true, but
yeah, I don't know.
I thought Paul Felder confirmed that. I could be wrong, but I thought Paul Felder.
No, I'm pretty confident that's what the story went out originally. That's kind of the truth that stuck, but it actually wasn't true. Because the commission never said that. The commission never said that. I think fighters.
The thing with that too is anything that's wonky that's happening with the New York commission at the time, I think people would have been like, yeah, that's just on par. Because New York is a bizarre commission.
It is.
Look at me spreading fake news. How dare
me. Good for you. Good for you, sir.
Curtis Blaydes rose to the title from Matt Bradbury. With Curtis Blaydes recently losing to Derek Lewis, swiping ranks third, how many wins would he need before a title shot? Personally, I would like to, also, who would you like to see him fight next? Personally, I would like to see him fight Sergey Pavlovich or Alexander Gustafsson. I don't think there's an exact number. Curtis Blaydes just needs to fight. I don't think there's an exact number. Who should he fight next? Don't know. He's already fought a lot. But Matt, who should Curtis Blaydes fight next? And how many more wins away before we can actively start talking about Curtis Blaydes getting a title shot again?
Curtis Blaydes could very well end up fighting the winner of Ciryl Gane and Jared Rosenstrike, especially with Derek Lewis wanting to fight Overeem. So there's a lot of weird things that can happen in heavyweight right now. I don't see him needing a ton of fights. He could very well have two and be in a title shot. But I think that's the minimum. I think two at minimum to get back in that conversation. And then when weird things happen, like if Stipe retires, if John Jones comes up, there's all sorts of mess that could happen in heavyweight right now. But I think it'll be fine either way. I don't know if I like the Gustafsson matchup or the Pavlovich matchup, honestly.
I
think
the winner or loser going back of this to 205. Matchup.
Yeah, I thought that was a thing too. So, yeah. Winner or loser of this upcoming event would be my pick for him next.
Casey, who should Curtis Blaydes fight next?
Oh, I remember who I said I wanted. It's a big jump in competition.
I know who you're gonna say.
I was going Curtis Blaydes versus Romanoff. Remember him?
It's a little bit of a. So you want Curtis Blaydes to fight an unranked fighter?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
Yes, I do. Romanov's come right. with two dominant victories in UFC. Yeah, I like that. I like big jumps in comp. I like big jumps. I think it's. Man, isn't Juan Harris like a three? Was he on a 3-fight losing streak now? Or
two?
Two. No, I don't like that fight. I don't like that fight.
Just because he's lost two in a row?
Yeah. I think it's a hard road back to the belt for Curtis Blaydes or to be a number one contender. I think those are big losses. Like I said, like he didn't lose a decision or a close loss. He got like just out colded and we're like, he got knocked out so bad the UFC cameras were like, don't put the camera on him, just point it somewhere else. You know, that it was one of those type of knockouts. You know, that's out. Did you see the boxing knockout between Valdez and I forgot his opponent's name? Did you see that?
Yeah, it was a murder.
Did you actually watch the whole fight though?
Yeah.
It was that boxing match was phenomenal, awesome. Fight. Oh, such a good
fight. You throw two Mexican boxers in a ring.
It was such a good fight. But did you notice how differently they cover boxing covers big knockouts versus how UFC covers it? Just if you're at home, watch the last round and watch the following 10 minutes and how they covered his opponents, how he got knocked out and how they handled it versus how the UFC handled it. It's just very different, very different. And I really like the very mature and safe way boxing covered it, because very much acknowledging how freaking dangerous what these gentlemen are doing in there. And I'm sorry, I got digressed a little bit on that, but talking about big.
No,
about
you're big, not wrong. And I think that's directly related to MMA's never had a major death in the UFC.
Yeah. Yeah. Because boxing fans, I think I remember Pauly when everyone was hanging on Pauly, but Pauly was talking to media. He talked about this a lot, how like boxing fans know that you can die in there, and MMA fans are kind of still in denial about that. But
freaking look at what, like, how Muhammad Ali's life was at the end, or Joe Frazier, like Joe Lewis, like, you see their interviews in the end of their life and you're like, was it worth it? And like, MMA is still such an, like, the UFC specifically is such a young sport that we don't really have that right now.
And that, but we have, but that it's coming around the corner. We have guys like Spencer Fisher talking. We have guys like Mac Danzig talking. And I'm sure, like, there's a lot of stories out there that we can't publish, like, that we know about other fighters.
Going through that, you know, too. Like, Matt, you remember what happened with Junior Seau. That is a as big of a travesty as possible. Or like Jim McMahon of the Bills. I mean, not the Bills, the Bears. Like, that's happening in every major sport, and it will happen with MMA.
Even at younger ages, like with Anthony Hernandez. I mean, he obviously had a couple of screws loose, but he had CTE bad too, and he was still young. Like, it's just heads are not meant to be crashing into things.
did they ever say how Vincent Jackson passed away? Like, what was the cause of that?
I never saw that. I never saw a cause or a reasoning.
Do you know who did you hear the Vincent Jackson news, Casey? You might not know who he is, but it was kind of in the headlines for a bit.
Is that recent?
Vincent Jackson. No, yeah, it was like in the last week or so. Vincent Jackson was at one point in time one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Okay, yeah.
Unbelievable.
I didn't know the details of the story, but yeah.
Yeah, tell me. He's on the Chargers and the Buccaneers, and he was unbelievable. And how old was he? Like, early 30s, and he passed away in a hotel. I don't know how, but I know his family donated his brain to CTE studies too. And there are a few talk about, like, Jeff Hardy and Mick Foley, professional wrestlers, have already said whenever they move on to the next part of, like, when they die, they are 100% donating their brain to CTE studies too. Like, they've already written that out, that is what is going to happen with their bodies. So,
jeez, you just think of all the chair all shots scary. Mick Foley took to the head. My God.
I love, at the point, I used to love the Attitude Era. I used to love it. I've done a lot of rewatching. I was like, God, do you remember when The Rock wrestled Mankind at the Royal Rumble?
Yes.
And he got thrown through the spotlight. Have you ever seen that match?
No, I haven't.
So, like, the matches that you see at, like, PWG and like the ones on AEW with, like, Moxley and Omega, I can watch those all day. I am so uncomfortable watching Mick Foley versus The Rock. It stresses me out. There's a point in time where Mick Foley had his hands handcuffed behind his back, and The Rock just, like, and The Rock hit his face with a steel chair full force, like, 6 times. And Mick Foley's hands are, I'm like, he's like blocking the metal chair with the top of his forehead. And I was like, I can't watch this right now.
Is it like watching old videos of Shibata and Ishii headbutting each other?
Worse.
Oh, worse. Oh, gosh.
Worse.
When I see the Shibata headbutts, I get scared.
Have you ever seen Beyond the Mat? Have you ever seen Beyond the Mat, the documentary? It is the best professional wrestling documentary in the world. They were behind the scenes for that match. And the whole leading up to that is Mick Foley talking about his family. He has a real, at the time, Noelle Foley was so young. Like, she was like 5 or 6. And she's front row when that's happening. And they keep cutting to them in the documentary of, like, do you know the famous scene of Mark Coleman with his daughters? Like, in Pride?
After he lost to Fedor.
It's
and
that.
Then yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, he was just sad. Mick Foley's wife is literally covering her kids. Like, holding it. She's like, don't watch. I'm like, I can't do it. They're so young, and they're just watching their dad get just wailed on by The Rock.
Jeez.
They go backstage and say,
hey, we're all friends.
Yeah. You know it's fake, guys. It's fake.
Well, in that documentary, Mick Foley's a little annoyed because The Rock didn't go and check on him after.
Dwayne.
But you can't say anything bad about Dwayne.
Can't.
All right, a couple more questions.
Four Corner Sports on Twitter. Now that Valentina will face Andrade, will this mark as Valentina's toughest fight at 125? Maybe.
It'll be interesting. It's a different fight. That's all that matters.
Maybe. Jessica Andrade is super powerful. Matt, what do you make of this fight?
Toughest, I don't agree with, because she just fought Ioana at 125 recently. So, I mean, yeah, it's a different fight. It's a different fight, different style matchup. She's going to try to go in there and get her to the ground, I would assume. So that's an interesting dynamic that we haven't really kind of seen in Valentina's fights as of late. So that's just the different aspect. I don't think it's going to be tough for Valentina to deal with that, because I could see Valentina just snatching up an arm and going home early. So.
Yeah, but I see Andrade picking her up and then slamming her down over and over again while she's holding in that arm. Don't you see it, man?
I could see it. I could see it. Just see it. Like a I cartoon think the, moment.
Just the get off me.
The path to victory for Andrade, to beat Andrade, is out there. Like, Joanna showed it. Rose showed it. Rose was looking phenomenal since she got dropped in her head, too. Yeah. And Valentina, the way to beat Valentina, there's been at 125, has... The last fight was talent. Like, Maya just said, F it. I won't respect your striking and just try to power you into the fence. And Valentina looked super shocked and super frustrated for the first two rounds. And then she finally got her bearings. But, like, hey, she's champion for a reason. Made awesome adjustments on the fly. But the path to beat Valentina at 125 is not written stone yet, I think. But I don't know. To be TBD. On Andrade.
Is that fight going to be at the Apex or is it overseas?
Don't know.
If it's at the Apex in the small cage, I give Andrade a lot more chances to win. I think that, because I think for Valentina to win, she's going to stand the outside, basically make it a little kind of boring and use footwork.
We said the same thing when Andrade fought Chukagian in the big octagon.
That would be an advantage
and
for
Andrade, not Chukagian.
Yeah.
And Andrade got in close and body shot at her and sent her tumbling.
Which KEN ain't Valentina, so
great fighter.
Great, yeah. I like this fight. I'm still picking Valentina, of course, because it's Valentina right now. She looks, you know, just incredible. She's fighting at her peak. But
this is Valentina, the right fight to make.
So. Oh, absolutely.
This is the right fight to make.
Because it's different, I think, because we're talking and we're not going, oh, it's another corpse, you know, for Valentina to punch, you know, whatever. No, I think this fight's exciting, and I like it. And Andrade can put Valentina really on her back, and Valentina has lost rounds, significant rounds, I mean, like lost rounds badly, by not getting beat up on her back, but just kind of being complacent on her back. And she can lose rounds that way. Now, can she lose three rounds out of a five-round fight? Who knows? But I'm interested. And it's our last...
Dillashaw possibly getting a title shot from Tristan Gardet. We've talked about this a lot, but Matt hasn't. Do you think TJ Dillashaw should get a title shot as his first fight back coming off suspension? Listening to an interview with Mike Swick on his podcast, TJ said that Jan has been calling him out and wants to fight because he knows that he didn't beat the real champion to get the bantamweight title. Matt, Casey and I have talked about this a whole lot. What do you think TJ should get the winner of Sterling Jan? If not, who should he fight next?
Definitely not. I don't care what TJ says in any of his interviews. He does not deserve a title shot because you admitted that you cheated. You have to have at least two fights, in my opinion, proving that you can fight clean, and then you can go in there and get a title shot. But coming back straight into a title shot after admitting that you cheated and serving a suspension, hell no. That's just, it's ridiculous to even come back and have the audacity to call for a title shot after that.
Got him. So who should he fight first?
That's a good question. You know what? I don't know the best answer to that, to be honest with you.
There's two options, I think.
What do you think?
I think Rob Font's a good one. I think he's sitting at five. He's the only one that's not really matched up right now or hasn't. Like, I think Corey Sandhagen has earned the winner already of Sterling and Jan. If Corey Sandhagen wants that fight, because he gave an interview with our own Damon Martin, who said, I will fight TJ Dillashaw just to keep TJ from taking the title shot. Because I know Casey and Mike Heck like this other fight. If they want TJ to fight Uriah Faber, because now's the time to do it. Sanhagen's concerned that if they give TJ a gimme fight and he wins, then he skips the queue. Corey Sanhagen's willing to fight TJ Dillashaw to stop that. Any of those fights I'm fine with. If I had my pick as a fight fan, I want to see TJ versus Corey Sandhagen because that is an incredibly high-level fight. I think the Rob Font fight is the one that makes the most sense just because Sandhagen's done already enough to win it. The Uriah Faber fight is obviously the money fight, so I'm fine with any of those three. Matt, which of those three names, which one would you prefer?
I guess Font, right? I guess.
I like it. I think don't have an issue with any of them, though.
I think that would be an interesting, just a good fight, a good solid fight, just to, you know, get TJ's bearings back. And it's a good opportunity for Font, too, to prove that he deserves that number three next to his name right now. If he beats TJ, I mean, hell, he's definitely looking at a title shot.
If he beats TJ,
he doesn't have to take another fight, even though he's ranked number three. He can just sit on the sidelines, let the rest sort out at the top and just kind of sit there and be like, all right, it's my turn now.
Okay, so you still on the Uriah Faber fight train?
Depends what point of view you're coming from. If you're the UFC and you want to make Sandhagen a star, you book Sandhagen TJ. Because that's what Sandhagen needs. Obviously, we know he's that good. We know he's, like, no, as far as fight skills, he's that level. But in terms of just popularity, pay-per-view buys, you know, moving the needle, Corey still needs that win over a heel like TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah.
If I'm TJ Dillashaw, I absolutely want to fight Uriah Faber. I know fighters are the most confident people ever in the history of the universe, but bro, you got popped the VPO. You're not an evil person, but you did something bad. You need to come back, and for yourself, you need to show yourself that you can still fight at TJ Dillashaw level clean. And I think Uriah Faber is a perfect opponent to do that. I think that would motivate him in the gym. It'll motivate him during fight week to sell the fight. And I think it's a great showcase. It could be a great showcase performance for TJ Dillashaw. And it would kind of check off a lot of boxes. Like, you know, Matt's like, he needs to get a win, you know, a clean win. And if TJ Dillashaw can come out there clean, pass all his USADA test, and just totally whoop up on Faber, someone he's had beef with, and, you know, all that stuff, then I think that's what TJ needs. But if I'm the UFC, it just depends what UFC wants. If you want to make Corey a star, you do Sandhagen TJ. If they want to build up TJ to another title fight, do it through Faber, I feel.
Or there's just a wild card out there that just gets to fight randomly, like when Cruz came back and fought Mizugaki. Mizugaki,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, immediately. Like, that was his welcome. And then he got hurt again and came back and fought TJ. Yeah. So unless they want to just throw him up. But again, TJ's not coming off an injury. He's coming off a suspension.
It's a little different, yeah.
Anyway, we've gone way over time.
Way over time.
So,
all right. Just because we got the questions and answer it real quickly.
Four Corner Sports again, with the UFC not having anyone set in stone for Tough at this point, shouldn't they just contact Connor and Nate to do Tough, or Connor and Dustin to set up the trilogy and have the belt on the line? No and no.
I agree with that. No and no.
No and no. Thank you for your question. Thank you for your question.
I think Dustin will fight Connor in May.
For the belt or just for fun? For money?
No belt.
Just another, yeah, cool, whatever.
To make money.
Make money. Hey, good for Dustin. Get another, not easy paycheck, but
a very
Was Dustin the underdog coming? Oh, sorry, go on.
I don't know. I don't know, honestly. Okay. I think right now the lightweight division, it's not a tournament for the title. It's a tournament to fight Dustin. Dustin versus fill in the blank for the vacant lightweight title. If he beats Connor again, obviously. Right now, I think Chandler should fight Charles Oliveira, winner fights Dustin, especially if Dustin's going to, because my prediction's Dustin Connor May, let Chandler and Oliveira fight, winner gets Dustin.
As long
or
as
the it, winner, whatever. I don't
as
know.
Long as it doesn't involve Tough, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Anyway, no Tough. Anyway, that's a wrap for this episode of the A-Side Live Chat. Thank you so much for coming and talking 90 minutes of fist fighting, Matt.
Yes.
I'm still waiting for you.
With 30 minutes of anime. 30 minutes, yeah.
30 minutes. We got an hour anime and 30 minutes of fighting. Yeah. But as you know, Matt, the floor is yours to say, plug, talk about whatever you want before we sign off.
Yeah, like we went a little long today, so I'll just keep it short and sweet. Follow me. Twitter handle's right there. Would appreciate it. Check out my work over at The Body Lock as well. And yeah, that's all I got. We went on a very nice rant about UFC's decision to air Michael Chandler as a Black History piece during this past event. So I won't, you know, go into it here, but go check out that video because me and my fellow, my colleague Anthony Walker, who is also a friend of this show here, we went in. And yeah, I will just say that.
My goodness. I couldn't believe that piece when I saw it. Anyway,
I was like,
Casey, you got anything to say, or are we ended it on that?
No, I'm.
Yeah, let Matt have the spotlight for that one. Anyway,
hey, where my Jack Johnson hoodie? Hey, Black History Month.
There you go.
There you go. Anyway, go. We'll find out. We'll go find out Matt's. Go find Matt's all his work at the Body Lock. Great stuff as always. He'll be back. Eventually, he'll make his debut on Between the Links. He can lose to me like everyone else.
Ooh.
Won't be tomorrow. I don't know if Mike Heck has announced tomorrow's opponent, but I don't want to spoil it here if he hasn't already. But
tomorrow's victim.
Fill in the blank is a victim. Yeah. Anyway, you find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, all that stuff. But until next Wednesday, we're out. Tune in to Virtual Media Day tomorrow.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.